Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. In this podcast, we'll explore trends, issues, and events surrounding Lutheran education. In each episode, we'll invite educational experts to shed light on topics that support educators, administrators, and staff. Thank you for listening to LSEM's Lutheran Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. My name is Richard Schumacher. I'm the Director of Programs and Services for LSEM, and today it's EdExec Day, and we are very pleased to bring back to the podcast two of our favorite guests of all time. Dr. Chris Cody is the Education Executive in the South Wisconsin District, and Travis Grucke, the EdExec in the Michigan District. Gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, Rich.
Didn't know we were your favorites. I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely my favorites. You know, we can get into all the reasons for that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I think we'll save that till later because Travis is on a tight schedule. So we're going to jump into the questions now. And then after Travis has to leave, then Chris, you and I can talk about Travis behind his back. And I'll definitely want to listen to the podcast once it comes out here in a few days. But anyway, in case you haven't heard, there's been this pandemic going around the globe called COVID, and it's affected schools now for about 15, 16 months, especially our Lutheran schools. Let's start by talking about your thoughts on how our schools have handled this pandemic this past year. A lot of different ideas and thoughts amongst schools, public, private, parochial. How have our Lutheran schools handled this? And Travis, we'll go ahead and throw that question out to you first.
You know, obviously everybody heard everything about last year, and then this school year started up with all kinds of craziness with a roadmap here in Michigan from our governor's office and then rules and regulations. But, you know, the doomsday scenarios that everybody was saying back in August of our schools that would stay in person, how dare you? I can't believe it's going to happen. I mean, our schools have done it and they've done it well. We've had some hiccups. We've had a few little things here and there, but overall, our 140 or so preschools and elementary schools and high schools have done an amazing job of face-to-face education and kept students safe, no crazy outbreaks of things happening. And we've just been blessed and thankful and are looking forward to hopefully a little more normal 2021 school year.
Chris, what about Wisconsin? What are you seeing?
Our teachers and schools have adapted really well this school year. Like Travis said, most of our schools at the end of last year, all of our schools were shut down for the last 2.5 months. And then principals had to spend the summer coming up with reopening plans, depending on which jurisdiction they're in. So if you're in the city of Milwaukee, that you have a totally different set of circumstances than somewhere in one of our outlying counties. So advising those schools is different because they're all in different areas with different prohibitions and the like. But the majority of our public schools stayed closed. And so the ability of our Lutheran schools to be nimble and adjust and adapt and still provide in-person education has been a tremendous blessing. Anecdotally, we've seen enrollment go up in the vast majority of our schools. I was just at a school in Menasha last week for a chapel, and they ended last school year with 43 kids, and they currently have 65. And I asked the principal what the reasoning was, and he said they were all because they could guarantee that they were going to be in person. And then I asked, well, how many of them are coming back next year? He said all but one. There was a lot of hemming and hawing about this pandemic, and rightfully so. There was it was a travesty, and there was a lot of death and illness and changes to our normal way of life. But the silver lining, one of the silver linings, I think, is that at least in South Wisconsin, our our schools have thrived in being able to continue to provide in-person instruction.
It's really giving schools an opportunity to show themselves to a group of parents who otherwise really would have never given us a look. And it's remarkable to see. I've heard lots of stories the same, Chris, where schools that have brought in a healthy number of new families have managed to retain them. That was the big worry throughout the year for a lot of principals. Will we be able to keep these families? And I'm hearing more and more stories like that.
Yeah, similar here in Michigan. Our rural areas were probably hit the hardest because a lot of those school districts stayed in session the whole time, as well as a lot of those families chose a homeschool option. So we're seeing some numbers already bounce back in that area, but certain pockets definitely had a significant increase this past school year. And we're hearing as well, anecdotally, that many of those love what they have in their Lutheran schools and they want to stay there. And they're looking forward to next year and being a part of it.
And looking at next year, what do you think principals and teachers should expect? I mean, my guess is probably another roadmap or plan to go into the school year, obviously at a different level than what we had back in summer of 2020, but still probably some hurdles to have to get through and some hoops to get through in terms of just the response to whatever we're dealing with variants or just the lingering effects of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens with vaccinations this summer. I know it's down now to, I think it's 12-year-olds, 12 to 16-year-olds. If that gets down into the grade school level even further, I think that may change the way we have to approach this in our schools. I think some of the confusing aspects of things right now is when you have a CDC that comes out and says, you don't need to wear masks anymore, things like that. And it kind of creates this air of safety. But in our elementary schools, those students don't have access to a vaccine yet. And so there's just in general, I think there's a lot of confusion. I'm not sure what it's like in Michigan, Travis, but here, there's no statewide mandate anymore for masks, but in certain cities there are. And then you have the CDC says if you're fully vaccinated, you don't need to wear one. So there's a lot of misinformation, I think, that's out there, and it makes things confusing. And so principals are going to have to do their research and figure out where things are at. And I think same as last year, have multiple plans in place as you get ready, so that when it comes time for August and school starts, you can execute whichever one is applicable at the time.
Yeah, here in Michigan, the in good faith phrase has been used in recent orders. So, little ones should wear it in good faith. So I think in the fall, we're going to have a much more kind of county oversight, depending on where you're located in the state. Obviously, Alpena might be a little different than Ann Arbor in terms of what is expected of students and families in schools when they're in session in the classrooms. So it might even be a little bit more chaotic than this last year where we had one rule for everybody. It might be a little bit different. That's why our principals are going to have to collaborate quite a bit, say, what are you guys doing really closely in our areas where we got schools very close to each other? Because we don't want, hey, we're going to be the mask school, we're going to be the unmasked school, and have parents flip them back and forth just because of that reason.
We've had somewhat changing topics, but I think it gets back to what Rich asked. We've had some schools that have remained that have offered a virtual option all year. There have been others who have started with it and now everybody's back in person. But what I'm hearing from a number of our principals is, should they still offer a virtual option next year, even if they're not required to? Because there have been some families, for whatever reason, that this has worked out better for them to have a virtual option. And so they've been struggling with that. I believe that one of our larger high schools is still going to offer a virtual option, not because they are required or mandated to, but because there's been enough of a demand for it to continue. But I think in general, it is certainly forced our schools to think outside of the box. And that's a silver lining too.
Yep. Agreed.
One last question on COVID, and then we'll move on to a couple other topics here. Obviously, with the vaccines, that's something that we're seeing a lot of people having to make that decision, whether that's something you want to pursue or don't want to pursue. And it's led to some discussions in a number of places, businesses and society, about whether or not to mandate the vaccine in order to be a part of a community, whether it's a university campus allowing incoming freshmen, or one of the airlines based here out of Detroit recently announced that all new hires will have to be vaccinated before they can be hired. They won't be hired if they're not. Where do you see that going with our schools? I know there's going to be a lot of check with your school council to get some advice on those types of things. But you see any other flags like that, or any other possible hot topics that might be entering into your inboxes or your phone calls here in the next few months?
Travis, do you want this one, or am I hopping on my soapbox?
I'll start real quick first. I think it's coming down the road here, especially when we start saying a seven-year-old can be vaccinated. And we are just not going to see a huge amount of numbers, I think, in our schools where parents are all jumping on board to get their kids vaccinated. So I'm a little nervous when that starts coming out in terms of what our schools should and should not be doing. I think definitely legal counsel to talk about that. We already have the requirements, for the measles and those kind of things that parents pretty much all across the board, with a few exceptions, sign up for. But I think this one's going to be a little bit different, and I'm not sure where families are going to fall. I already know from the crazy emails I've received over the last 12 months from parents who don't think the mask issue should be there, that they're definitely not going to be getting their kids vaccinated. So that's going to be a great challenge, I think, for our schools to navigate, still loving, still caring, and make wise decisions.
Yeah, I think I've got some pretty strong opinions on the vaccine that probably go against, I'm guessing, the vast majority of our constituents. But and I've said to a few people that in a way, I'm glad I'm not in a principal's chair right now, because I would be pushing for all of my teachers to get vaccinated. And one of the primary reasons for that would be every time a teacher is tested positive for COVID, that classroom is then shut down for 10 or 14 days. And the kids have to go back to virtual. Parents have to make changes to their careers, to their work life, and things like that. So I think there is a consideration that should be taken as a teacher for how that impacts the learning in the classroom, because your choice to not get vaccinated is, and then if you contract COVID, now shuts down the classroom, or in some places, multiple classrooms for a number of days. What will be interesting for me, and I'm not a scientist, I don't read the research religiously or anything, but I'd be interested to know if this is going to go the way of like just a normal flu, where if you choose to get a flu shot every year, that's on you. And I think ideally that's what it would be. But again, there are much, much smarter people than I that know that. Or is this going to be something where it is more severe than a flu, and it becomes a standard, like, the measles, mumps, rubella, where it's a required vaccine unless you can have some type of exemption. But as it stands right now, everything is emergency use authorization, so you can't require it anyways. So,
yep. And again, that's the joy of living in a country like ours, where we can have opinions that differ. And it's also the joy of serving a God that we serve, where those opinions allow us to forgive one another if we sometimes disagree on those different things. And I for one, just want to say we record this on Zoom, but obviously it's an audio podcast, but the look on Chris's face when that question came up was well worth the time to schedule this in and of itself. I really enjoyed and appreciated that. But no, great insights, guys. Appreciate it. We talked about enrollment a little bit earlier and how we've seen some schools that have increased fairly well here as a result of families looking for in-person options. Have we seen any schools in any areas go the other way, take some hits in terms of lost enrollment? And how are the schools handling that situation? I mean, a lot easier to deal with trying to find some more space for kids as opposed to trying to find more kids for the space.
Yeah, our biggest hit was definitely in the area of early childhood. So our numbers this year compared to last year were down 1,500 students, which was a significant impact for the early childhood levels. So we're seeing that turn back around, however, and we've seen an influx of early childhood come back to our schools and our early childhood centers. However, our issue now is a worker issue. We don't have the staff to have the workers in our early childhood centers. Had two conversations last week with some more early childhood centers that will have to close classrooms, not because they don't have the students, but because they don't have the people to put in there for licensing issues. So we are praying like crazy that, you know, I don't want to again get political, that some incentives to not go back to work are not as strong as they have been. And we get some people and some individuals willing and have that desire to get in our early childhood centers to serve and to minister to those little ones.
Chris?
Yeah, I think our situation is fairly similar to Michigan. If we've seen any hits anecdotally, it's been at the early childhood levels, you know, especially 4K and under. You know, the parents are making decisions to keep their child at home if they're able to, if they're able to work from home, rather than send them into a child care center or a pre-K program. I don't have a specific number on that, but I don't believe it's extremely prevalent, not to the extent that we have the enrollment increases at the grade school and high school levels.
So in those places where you're seeing the increased growth in the schools, what are principals telling you are some of the biggest challenges that they're facing? Do they have the staffing that they need to be able to accommodate those additional kids? Are they dealing with an influx of special needs students and looking for more assistance in those areas? What are some of the things that you're hearing on that side of it?
I think for ours, it's especially the new families, a lot of them, again, have no idea what Lutheran education is about, or what Christian education is about, for that matter. So it's been a challenge not being able to bring people into our community as they normally have, because we haven't been able to bring parents into the building and do all the events and things that we've normally done. So the communication channel has been pretty much digital, you know, maybe some phone calls and some Zooms, but it's through email. So we haven't been able to just, you know, immerse them in our school culture as well as we would like. And I think that's a big, big challenge, as well as for teachers when, you know, you're getting 7 or 8 new 5th or 6th graders, and most of them have no idea when you whip out One in Christ what these stories are about. So going back to the basics about who this Jesus guy is and what he's all about and what he did, and you can't just assume the previous knowledge for a lot of students, especially in the area of religion. And then the academic end, you know, using the NWEA and other assessments to really see where these students are at, and making sure we can do the best we can to assist them in the educational realm, not just put a body in a seat.
Yeah, I would agree with what Travis said. It's not necessarily a staffing issue per se, especially at the grade school, high school levels. The enrollments that have gone up haven't been to the point where it's required them to add a new 6th grade teacher or whatever. It's just the class sizes maybe gotten larger.
Now, we talked a little earlier about this idea of needing to find teachers, especially in the early childhood realm, where, again, centers had to close for quite some time and it's taken time to build back up. But really, before COVID hit, we were already, as a synod, looking at some pretty substantial shortages when it came to finding certainly qualified Lutheran teachers. But now, it seems like just finding qualified teachers in general has become more and more difficult. What are you seeing in those areas? And how do you think we need to go about addressing it? What are some of the ways that we as a synod and our districts can go about addressing finding teachers to be able to fill those slots? Chris, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I wish I had a magic bullet on how to address it. I mean, the problem is real, and it's been real for the last 10 years, at least. Again, I don't have my statistics pulled up in front of me, but I want to say there were close to 500 requests again this year for teachers out of our Concordias, and there was 108 or 109 graduates. So, you know, one in five of our schools or so is getting somebody who has graduated from a Concordia. I think the other number is now 26% of our teachers in our Lutheran schools are actually rostered members of the LCMS. So I guess the first step in solving any problem is to recognize that there is a problem and making sure that our congregation members who are in the pews on Sundays understand that. And when they go to voters meetings and they're wondering why we're not calling a teacher, why are we hiring someone instead or contracting, it's because we just don't have, the supply is not there. And again, I wish there was a magic bullet on how to fix it. The Concordia system is doing everything they can by offering tuition discounts and incentives. And I know other individual districts are trying to offer some type of loan forgiveness or at least exploring that option. In the end, I think it always comes back to, are we growing our teachers from the time that they are, you know, in first grade and second grade? Are the teachers saying, hey, I think you'd be a great teacher someday. I think you'd be a great pastor someday. And also doing that while they're happily enjoying their jobs, because I don't need a cranky teacher telling my kid, yeah, I think you'd be a great teacher someday. And then to say, well, I don't want to, you don't look like you enjoy what you're doing. Why would I want to be a teacher? So there is no easy answer. I wish there was.
I think we have to cast our net larger too. I just think we got to be able to say in our communities, we got some amazing Christian people that might not be Lutheran that we can bring into our fold. And that's on pastor and principal and other leaders then to really share with them what Lutheran education is all about, and just pouring a Lutheran into them at that time and sharing what it means and your responsibility as the man, just almost an evangelist in that classroom, sharing Christ with those students every single day. And we got to find more avenues and tools to educate people in that beyond just the colloquy, which is great for teachers that want to go that route, but we need some other avenues too, make it less daunting and a little bit quicker to get them up to speed of what it means to be in Lutheran education.
Yeah, Concordia Seward had started a program in Lutheran school ministry, and they tried to launch that probably 4 years ago or so, and that was an option that didn't result in roster status. It was not a colloquy, but it was something that would take someone who taught in the public schools, but is maybe, you know, a great Christian, or someone who's Catholic, and they could take the course and at least get the basics of what it means to be a Lutheran, and then what it means to be a Lutheran educator as well. I was talking with someone from Seward, from Nebraska last week or 2 weeks ago, and I think the hope is that they can kind of retool that and relaunch it, because again, that's another way where we can help equip our schools and equip our teachers.
All right, we're talking with Dr. Chris Cody and Travis Brucke on the podcast today. We're going to step aside for a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, sponsored by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. Attention, Southeast Michigan golfers. Lutheran Special Education Ministries is excited to announce our 16th annual golf outing to be held on Friday, September 17th, 2021 at Cherry Creek Golf Club in Shelby Township. All the fun starts at 8:30 a.m. with a shotgun start. Golfers can enjoy 18 holes of golf with carts, coffee and donuts to start, lunch at the turn, and dinner, beverages, and fun, all supporting Lutheran Special Education Ministries. Not a golfer or don't live in Southeast Michigan? You can still help sponsor our golf outing through any one of our different sponsorship packages available on our website. For more information about sponsorship or to sign up a foursome, please visit our website today at luthsped.org. That's luthsped.org. And we look forward to seeing you out in the links on Friday, September 17th. Welcome back to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. And again, we are joined by Dr. Chris Cody and Travis Grucke, the education executives in the South Wisconsin District and the Michigan District, respectively. So, EANS is kind of a dominant force in the landscape of non-public schools right now. For those of you listening who may not be aware, the federal government gave out a $2.75 billion with a B dollar allocation in grants to all of our non-public schools to assist with COVID-related issues. And most schools around the country have been dealing with applications and learning lots of information. I know Travis has been very active here in Michigan with this. I'm sure, Chris, you've had quite a bit to do with it there in Wisconsin as well. What are you guys seeing? I mean, obviously, the federal government providing funds for our schools to be able to help pay for needed things is a good thing. So there's a lot of positives that I think that we can easily see here. But what do you see as some potential landmines that we're going to need to avoid as we wander through these EANS times, especially with the prospect of a second round of EANS coming out here later this year? So Travis, we'll start with you on that. What do you see here with EANS and what it might bring?
Obviously, in certain areas, it's a blessing for our schools. I mean, Michigan's got $87 million for this round. We're not going to spend that $87 million because the PPP loan disqualified several schools who got it this past winter. So I don't want it just to be schools to just get a bunch of stuff. And that's what we're trying to fight, that I'm going to buy a bunch of Chromebooks and smart boards and, you know, it's just going to be a bunch of things that doesn't get used well. So we're at least petitioning here in Michigan for a broader definition to be allowable for this next round of EANS, that maybe some more PD, some more intentional PD can be focused on school improvement and not just COVID-related issues. We're also looking at maybe doing some things as a state, as non-public schools, to be more useful of those funds. But I foolishly signed up to be one of the reviewers for all the applications, and they're being inundated with all kinds of crazy ideas. So we have to kind of be the judge on what's good and what's not good. And schools have been very creative on what they're trying to get away with on certain pieces of this. It just can't be about stuff, and COVID's not going to be solved, and the stuff that happened through our student getting caught up on their learning is not going to be solved through those kind of things. So we are hoping that our government's going to hear our voice a little bit and maybe broaden that definition, as the public school's definition of how they can use it is quite different than ours. And they're getting several billion dollars also into the public school here in Michigan, and we are hoping for similar ways to use those funds.
Chris, what's EANS looking like in Wisconsin?
You can only buy so many Chromebooks. You know, I've got schools that have $100,000 of EANS money allocated to them, and the allowable uses are pretty specific. What we have going for us here in the state of Wisconsin is that our CESA 6, which is read by Ted Knightsky, who I know many of the folks in Michigan are aware, they are the ones who are handling all of the applications for the EANS funding. So we have an incredible partner who's helping to make pre-approvals and things like that. But again, they're not just going to sign everything because they think it's a good idea. It has to meet these 12 allowable uses. And again, there's only so much you can do. And with the second round coming out, it'll be interesting to see if any of those allowable uses are changed or if they're broadened. It's a good problem to have. It's money that can be spent. There are things I think that our schools would like to see that they could spend that money for that is somewhat COVID related that they're unable to just because of the way the law is written.
I think another thing that would be great with EANS too, from our perspective here at LSEM, would be an extension of the amount of time to be able to use the funds. Because right now, I heard a rumor out of Indiana, but it's just a rumor and it's from Indiana, so take that for what it's worth, that there's a 1 year it's going to be added on to that, but nobody knows the source of where that came from. So it's likely not anything that you can hang your hat on at this point. But for schools struggling to spend the allocation that they've received in EANS 1, Now having, an increased allocation and the same 12 items to spend it on, or even fewer because you can't do reimbursements, that just seems to fly in the face of, how is this really helping our schools if you're not able to find, as you said, some of these additional ways to be able to utilize it and to be able to strengthen schools. So hopefully there are some opportunities to be able to do that. Another thought that I could offer up here too is just looking at some of the schools that LCM has been able to partner with through EANS, trying to caution principals about being wise with the way you're going to spend this. Yeah, it's great if you're going to bring in a resource teacher who's going to be able to help your school for the next 2 years full time. But then at the end of those 2 years, if your budget doesn't allow them to be there even 25% of the time, that's going to be a pretty big cliff to go off of. So sustainability is important. And I think also some of those, now we can take this out of the budget because EANS has it. I don't want to see us kind of go back into that same problem that some schools had years ago when Thrivent had the matching dollars and schools were putting the matching dollars into their budgets to operate each year. And then when that program changed, now where are we going to find $50,000 because we can't match anymore? So what else do you see as some potential pitfalls for schools using EANS in these ways?
I think you hit on the head there with not taking out budgeted dollars and removing those line items from your normal budget because EANS took care of it. Already hearing that in a couple places, and I really challenge them to keep that line item in your budget. Maybe make some kind of, for a year or so, some purchase that you want to use those funds for, but it stays in there every year because this money is going away. And all of a sudden, you're not going to find $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to throw back in the budget 2 years from now.
And I think a lot of them are recognizing that. And same with some of the equipment. If you purchase Chromebooks with EANS money, those are not your Chromebooks. It's the U.S. Department of Education's Chromebook. I get it. Technology is outdated by the time it probably arrives. But and the chances of USDE or whomever coming back and saying, give us all these back is probably pretty slim. It's still not technically XYZ Lutheran School's property. I think the other thing is for principals to be okay with not spending it. It's okay if you've got 100,000 and you're able to say, I can use 20,000 on this. It's going to help my kids. It's going to help them with distance learning. Should we need to move there? And being okay with saying, I'm not just going to try to find a way to spend $80,000.
Yep. All right. You're listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. Travis is going to be signing off here. He's got business to go get to. But hey, before you go, Travis, I want to give you an opportunity real quick. Just if you have a message you want to send out to the teachers this year who have now survived what is probably the most unique, hopefully the most unique school year of their lives. Next year will get better and years after that will continue to improve. But just any messages that you would have to teachers as they wrap up this year?
Yeah, just again, just grateful for all that they've done. I hope this summer again can be a time where you can shut things off and you can get refreshed and recharged and ready to tackle next year. I hope you're able to just end the year on a great note. Not too many crazy countdown calendars, and all those are fun, but also just celebrate these last couple weeks as we end the school year and are ready to just be ready to love the students and ready to jump into next school year both feet, hopefully a little bit more normal, but recognizing we might still have to be flexible and adapt. And all the principals and leaders as well for what you guys have done. Awesome. Amazing. Nothing else to say besides that.
All right. And with that, Travis, we'll let you go. Thank you again for your time. Chris, if you can hang on for one more minute, just I want to continue the conversation with you a little bit if we can here. So again, now that Travis is gone, we can talk about him, but
yeah, let's go. Let's get real.
But we probably shouldn't because that wouldn't be nice. And I think we've already whetted his interest and he's listening to this feverishly now that it's been released. But in looking at where we've come through all of this, what do you think are the biggest lessons that our schools have learned? What are the biggest lessons you've learned about our schools having gone through the last year and a half that we've faced?
I think where I'd like to start with that question, Rich, is something that I've been hearing more and more, and it's more of a caution. I read an article by Yung Zhao, who's an educational researcher, and it deals with the whole concept of learning loss. And hearing lots of principals and schools talking about, well, we really need to catch up now. We really need to address this learning loss that happened as a result of COVID. And what Zhao argues and cautions against, which I agree with, is we have to be careful to not use this as an excuse for more testing, more standardized tests, more government testing. And you see this in the EANS funds and in other legislations that passed in other states where they want to address learning loss. And kids are extremely adaptable. And yes, they you're going to see studies that say, well, they lost X number of months in reading or X number of months in math. But in the grand scheme of things, they're also able to make these things up over time. And so the last thing that I want is one for our teachers to feel pressured that they need to go into next year thinking, okay, these kids, the last year was a total loss, and now I'm going to have to essentially teach two grade levels this year. I don't want that for the teachers. And I also certainly don't want it for our kids. I don't want our kids to come into school feeling overburdened with needing to quote unquote catch up. What I've learned from seeing teachers virtually and talking with principals virtually this year is we joke a lot about how Lutherans don't like change and we're not good at it. And what I've seen is that we are good at it. I think we talk ourselves out of it. It becomes a running joke about Lutherans' inability to change, but we've adapted and our schools have adapted. They've done it well. And so I've learned that we're much more malleable than we give ourselves credit. And my other caution then, I guess, besides that, what I've learned would be, we have done these adaptations. We have changed. We've sacrificed for our kids. Is that my concern now is for our teachers and for our principals coming out of this, Lord willing, is I worry that they'll have some version of like a PTSD, right? Where I've made the comparison with my principals that it's similar to the football players who have CTE. And it's never the one big concussion necessarily that gets them. It's the repeated small hits to the head. Well, COVID's been going on for 14 months now, and COVID has been at the front of most educators' minds every day for those 14 months. And it's just been kind of this constant drumbeat. Some days it's more recognizable than others. Other times you don't necessarily consciously realize it's there. And so my concern is that our teachers and principals will come out of this and will be somewhat shell-shocked. And so when Travis says, you know, take time to refresh, recharge, and do all that stuff, we say that every summer, and we mean it. I think we really mean it now. And I have been, and I'll continue to encourage that those workers who are on the Concordia Health Plan take advantage of the EAP, which gives you 6 free visits for your mental health. Give yourself a chance to talk and process so that you can come back in next school year ready to go. So, yeah, it's been a year, and I think we're coming out stronger for it, and we've learned some things about ourselves that will be useful going forward.
I think that's great advice too, to encourage our teachers to do that. Even if you're not feeling any sort of a malaise, just to have that opportunity, because again, it's kind of like being in a noisy room for an extended period of time And when you walk outside, you didn't realize how loud it was until you got out where it was quiet. And that high level of intensity that teachers have been dealing, you know, with all these different pieces, to now have this chance to take a break. A lot of the teachers will want to dismiss it, brush it off. It's just part of the deal, not really address some of those items. So I agree. I think that would be really sound advice for teachers to take advantage of that, just to have that chance to decompress, to get some of their feelings expressed, and really, come to grips with, hey, this is what we've been able to accomplish, what we've been through, and it's a lot. But take care of yourselves as well as your kids. You've earned it, and you deserve it as well.
Well, and if we're this concerned about our teachers, right, and rightfully so, think about the effects this has on our kids. And this is yet another trauma that many of them have had to endure or go through. There have been families where deaths have occurred because of COVID. There have been families who have endured job layoffs and other things. And so the stresses that this is putting, has put our students under, can't be overlooked either. And so an encouragement to school principals and teachers is to continue to check in on students' mental well-being. I know I mentioned earlier that they're adaptable and they're resilient, but they're also human. And they have struggled throughout this past year as well.
So Chris, just one last thing, similar to what we did with Travis when he had to step out, would just like to give you an opportunity to just share a message with the teachers that are out there listening, having come through this year of all years. What else can you say to them in terms of words of encouragement as they head into a well-deserved summer?
Yeah, I would echo everything that Travis said, and I'd also reemphasize the fact that we are much more adaptable and malleable than we give ourselves credit for. And I give our teachers and principals so much credit for their ability to, starting with when this all came about last March, to turn on a dime over the course of a weekend, to go from in-person instruction to virtual, and then the ability to provide some type of hybrid learning. It's been nothing short of amazing, and God has worked through them and continues to work through them, whether it be a quote unquote normal school year or a pandemic school year. And I've always believed that teaching is the most noble of professions, and as a Lutheran teaching, it's our calling. And so God had you in a classroom this year during this time for a specific reason. And I pray that they get time to relax and rest and gear up for next year. So,
and we will leave it with that. Thank you so very much. And again, thank you, Chris, for your time today. Travis, wherever you are, thank you for your time today as well. And thank you for the work that you guys do. The hours are long. The thanks that you get are probably few compared to the many concerns and issues that you have to deal with on a daily or monthly or yearly basis. But thank you for what you do to help our teachers to provide the academics and spiritual support that our kids need as they go through our Lutheran schools.
Yeah, and you too, Rich. We really appreciate everything that LSEM does, and their willingness to work with schools and make sure that all kids are able to get a Lutheran education.
It is our pleasure. And again, it's our pleasure also bring you this podcast. Again, we thank you for your listenership. If you've got ideas on different topics that you'd like to hear about, feel free to contact me, rschumacher@luthsped.org. But on behalf of Chris Cody, Travis Grucke, our producer, Dave Klonke, I'm Rich Schumacher. Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. I know.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. To hear future episodes, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. For more information on this episode's topic or any other questions regarding Lutheran education or Lutheran Special Education Ministries, please feel free to contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.